Part 6, Chapter 10. He had to get to Turl before the monster took off and blasted the village. The sun was arcing up, perilously close to the deadline. Noon. Johnny ran uphill on the trail, his heart overworked. Bushes whipped by, stones rolled under his pounding feet. It had been a wild night and a hard-worked morning. The clan chief had sent runners and riders thundering across the highlands to summon other chiefs. They came from far glens and hidden caves of the mountains, bearded, kilted, cautious and suspicious, enemies, many of them, one to another. The chiefs of the MacDougalls, Glencannons, Campbells, and many others had come. Even the chief of the Argyles, a subdued English lord from a group in the lower hills, had come. The king of a tiny Norse colony on the east coast had strode in late. It was after midnight when Johnny could talk to them all. He leveled with them. He explained that Turl had personal plans of his own, independent of the company, and was using his power to further his own ambitions. He told them that Turl conceived himself to be using Johnny, and through Johnny, men, to carry out his project, and that quite possibly Turl would slaughter the lot of them when he had finished with them. Johnny began to realize, as he spoke to the intent faces around the flickering council fire, that he must be dealing with some Scott love of guile. For when he told them he had an outside chance of turning the tables and using Turl, only then did the chiefs begin to nod and smile and hope. But when he told them about Chrissy, held as a hostage against his good behavior, and that part of his own plan was to rescue her, he had them. A streak of romanticism, which had survived all their defeats and humblings, welled up in them. While they could agree to a long-shot objective with their minds, they rose to the rescue of Chrissy with their hearts. What does she look like? Black eyes and corn silk hair? How was she formed? Beautiful and comely. How did she feel? Crushed with despair, hardly daring to hope for rescue. They were angered by the collar, disgusted with the leash, violent about the cage. They shook their chiefly weapons in the flashing firelight and made speeches and quoted legends. Beacon fires had been set flaming in the hills, their chiefs signaling a gathering of the clans. They sent their warlike messages until the dawn. A meadow was the assigned meeting place, and by noon the clans would be there. Questions and introductions and ceremony had detained Johnny until after 11 of the morning, and he looked up with a shock to see that he had very little time indeed to get to the plane and stop Turl from committing a folly that would ruin the future. With a sharp pain in his side from exertion, Johnny pounded up the steep, twisting trail, swift feet spurning the ground. He hardly dared take time to check the sun. He could not be sure whether Turl was keeping the appointment by a clock or by the heavens. He dreaded any moment to hear ahead of him the roar of the plane taking off for a lethal pass over the village. More than 5 miles, and all uphill, and over a very bad trail. Johnny heard the beginnings of a startup ahead of him. He was almost there. He burst through the brush at the edge of the plateau. The plane was already beginning to rise.
Hey! Hey, no!
He yelled, waving his arms, racing forward. If he missed, all his work would be undone.
Wait, wait!
The plane hovered, feet off the ground, turning toward the village. Johnny threw his kiln club the last 30 feet to strike the fuselage and attract attention. The plane settled back. Johnny collapsed on the ground, drawing air in loud, hoarse breaths. The roar of the plane turned off, and Turl opened the door.
Did they chase you out?
Said Turl into his face mask.
Well, get in, animal, and we'll go down and carry out a proper plan.
No,
said Johnny as he crawled up into the seat, still panting. His feet were bruised from stones, and he inspected them.
It's all set.
Turl was derisive.
All night I saw fires burning on the tops of the hills. I was sure they were roasting you for a feast.
No, they lit fires to call in candidates for the work group.
Turl plainly did not see how this could be.
We have to be very careful.
Turl could agree with that.
They're going to meet in a meadow about 3 miles from here.
Ah, you got them to get together so we could blast them better.
Look, Turl, we can succeed only if we do this exactly right.
You sure are wheezing. Tell me the truth. Are they chasing you?
Johnny threw down a moccasin, and it made a loud snap.
Ah, blast it! It's all arranged. Only we have to finish it. There will be hundreds in that meadow. I want you to land at the upper edge of it. I'll show you where. And then you must sit in the door of the plane and do absolutely nothing. Just sit there. I will choose from the candidates. We will get them aboard and leave by tomorrow morning.
You're giving me orders?
Shouted Turl.
That's how it was arranged.
He was putting his moccasins back on.
You must just sit there in the plane door so you can watch and make sure it all goes well.
I understand,
said Turl, with a sudden grin.
You have to have me there to frighten them into submission.
Exactly. Can we go down there now?